From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. In this Forum Hour, we begin with an interview with Hushang Asadi, an Iranian journalist who spent 6 years in Tehran's notorious Mojtarak prison. His book is called Letters to My Torturer, Love, Revolution, and Imprisonment in Iran. Then at 10:30, we find out all about the decline in philanthropy, highlighted in a recently released report from the Chronicle of Philanthropy. We'll take the pulse of charitable giving, and we'll include your calls, emails, and online questions and comments. Next. After this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's Forum program. In the early 1980s, Hushang Asadi spent 6 years in the infamous Mojtarak prison in Tehran following a government crackdown on opposition parties. In fact, there were probably 5,000 people locked up in the mid-80s and only around 800 survived. And he writes about this experience. He writes about really some pretty brutal torture that he endured. He was a supporter of the Islamic Revolution and was anti-Shah. He was actually a prison mate of the Ayatollah Khamenei and said with some levity that he was perhaps the only man who saw the Ayatollah Khamenei's private parts. But this is a story of a relationship, a rather intimate relationship, between a torturer and his victim. And it is a story that I can tell you is quite chilling to read. And makes your blood boil. He's a journalist, he's a writer, he's a translator, and the book is called Letters to My Torturer, Love, Revolution, and Imprisonment in Iran, and he joins us for this segment. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Delighted to have you here. I thought maybe we could begin by having you describe Mojtarak prison. It's an infamous, it's a notorious prison. What makes it such a terrible prison? What is being in Mojtarak prison like?
Do you mean I described the Komite Mojtarak prison,
the yes.
Buildings and what happened there? Komite Mojtarak is the oldest prison in Iran, built near 15 years ago. First, it used for people who are arrested in as a thief or something like this. But after many years, it transferred to political prison. It is this building is in the middle of Tehran, just in the middle of Tehran. The famous square, its name is Toubkhane, and it's a round building. And in the just in the middle of this round building, it's very beautiful building and very strong building, built by Germans many years ago. It is a little pool with blue. In the pool is the blue breaks and yellow red fish. It's very nice. You think here is
looks pretty from the outside.
Outside. But six corridors join to each other, and in each corridor there are many cellules. They send the people into the cellule, and in the beginning of each corridor is a room that used for the whip people and torture them.
Yeah, this is what comes across, of course, in your experience, is the torture. And the torture is, it's not like whippings. This is like Abu Ghraib. I mean, there were handcuffs, there were deprivation of sleep. You had to bark like a dog, you had to eat excrement. I mean, yes. These kinds of things that are just so unthinkable that were done to you to make you confess.
Yes.
To make you confess to what?
They make to confess me and another prisoner to the scenario the torturers made before. They always have a plan and a scenario before arrested this group or that group.
That you were a spy?
Yes. Before, for the leftist group, the plan was they are the spy of Soviet Union. And now the scenario is they are the spy of CIA or intelligence service or some Western security. It doesn't matter what you are and what you're doing or what you do. You must confess what torture once.
The torturer is a man you call Hamid, and Brother Hamid.
Yes.
And he's a man who also from time to time would use kindness with you. That was one of his weapons at the same time that he was doing these dreadful, brutal, and horrific things to you. What's so striking about this is in your book, it's almost as if you want to reach out to him. You want to let him know what you went through. You want to communicate to him.
No, this is the literature. It's the form of my book. Because when I was in prison, everything you have to do, eating, come out, down, go to toilet, have a brush, everything, you must write a letter to torture and said, hello, Brother Hamid, please let me go to toilet. Please, and give the letters to the guards sent for Brother Hamid, and he approved or not.
When I want total control over you.
Yes.
Total control.
Yes. When I was started to read my book, I read it two or three times, and in the end, I thought it's the better way. I wrote my book as that letters I sent for Brother Hamid.
You actually saw Brother Hamid in a photograph, too, years
yes,
after.
Yes.
He was an ambassador to Tajikistan.
Yes.
And so you had the opportunity to out him, as we say. That is to say, this was the man who was my torturer.
Yes. I found when I started my book, I didn't know where is Brother Hamid. Because it's after 20 years before I released from the prison, I was in exile in Paris and I started to write my book. In the meantime, I am going to write my book. A friend called me and asked me to open my organator, monitor in computer, and asked me to show that picture and find who is this man. So the picture loaded very, very slowly because my computer was old, and any minute the picture appeared, I shivering. I was afraid again, and at last when I find the full picture, I stray back to my chair and all of my body shivering, and I write there, this is my torturer.
We're talking again, if you've just joined us, with Hushan Asadi, and he's here in town. He'll actually be at the Berkeley Arts and Letters Hillside Club tomorrow evening at 7:30, which is over on Cedar Street in Berkeley. His book is called Letters to My Torturer, Love, Revolution, and Imprisonment in Iran. And this is a man who attempted suicide three times, who was sentenced to death by hanging, and who was tortured, and I don't want to get too graphic about this, but the soles of his feet were lashed until they were raw. He was hung upside down. As I said, he was made to not only eat his own excrement, but the excrement of others. These, you know, unthinkable and horrific kinds of things that he had to endure. And this is, in many ways, this experience. You were very political at one time. You're not political now, are
no,
you?
No, yes, I am not political.
And how do you feel about Iran now and the Green Revolution and Ahmadinejad?
I am very, very optimistic about the Iranian revolution. I think after 100 years that our people struggle with for freedom in Iran, and the last year it's started a movement in Iran. It's based on democracy and freedom. And so the women and the young people lead this movement, and they are majority in Iran. I think it will reach and happy end.
So you are political still. You just sounded political.
No, I am journalist, and as a journalist, I follow Iranian what happened in Iran. And in Iran, when you are journalist, you are writer, as even you are poet. What are you doing? It means political.
You knew Ali Khamenei. You knew the Ayatollah, Ali Khamenei.
Yes.
And were a cellmate of his. Did that help you finally, do you think?
No, never.
It wasn't the reason that you were able to get out finally. It was
because I lied in the court.
That was how you got out.
Yes.
Yes. What did you lie about?
In the court, they asked us three questions. Do you believe Islamic Republic of Iran? I said yes. It was lie. They asked the second question was, do you believe in your past? I told no. I hate of my past. They asked me, are you a Muslim, a pratic Muslim? And I told yes. And it's totally lie.
You're not a Muslim anymore.
I am not a Muslim, but I am not a pratic Muslim.
Let me open the phone lines. I'm going to give an opportunity to those of you listening to talk with our guests or pretty much to weigh in here. In fact, we welcome your phone calls. It's 866-733-6786, a toll-free number for you to join us if you'd like to talk to Hushag Asadi. Again, it's toll-free wherever you're listening or however on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, 866-733-6786. And we do welcome your calls. And if you have something you'd like to say or if you have a question you'd like to ask, now would be the time to call since he'll be with us right up until the half hour. You can also send an email, and the email address is forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website simply by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. Very difficult for you to remember all of this, to relive it, wasn't it?
Yes, so very difficult. Even just now, I am talking about that days, that horrified days. I am in tension and I am shivering, and in the mind something happened again and again. And every time I talk about that moment, I fell back to that prison, and brother Amit invited for me, whipped me, and asked me bark as a dog.
Made you bark, like Abu Ghraib, the same thing, you know, that was done, that demeaning thing that was done to Muslims in Abu Ghraib prison. You're now, you say, love, literature, and beer. That's
yes.
Pretty much it for your life.
Yes,
now.
But love generally, I mean love to my country, love to freedom, love to human rights, and also love to my lovely wife.
And you were a communist at one time?
Yes.
So to some extent, maybe that was what got you in trouble with the Islamic Revolution, your past again?
For a few years I was communist, but that party I worked with that accepted the Islamic Republic and supported this Islamic Republic. My party, my ex-party, doesn't against the Islamic Republic.
You're a human rights advocate, but I have a question. And I mean this all respectfully. Would you, if you had the opportunity, torture your torturer? If you had the opportunity to torture Hamid, would you torture Hamid?
Never and never and never.
Yes. Why never?
Never, because if I torture brother Hamid, I transfer to a torture. I hate of torture. To torture, I guess, the human beings, I guess, human rights. And I never take a slap to someone. Never.
Let me go to our callers. We'll go first to Ramin. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. So glad to have you on this program. And my question is that given the post-election events the summer before last and how this regime shows to be brutal and they're not just going to disappear that easily, and given that we have a very large and relatively generally successful expat community here in California and elsewhere, the question becomes, what can we really do in a meaningful way to bring about this regime change? Because if we were just simply advocating people going out and protesting, we know what the result is, and that would be that they'll get slaughtered. So it wouldn't be more meaningful for people like us to call up for arms, basically. In other words, have them have some sort of minimal protection when they, so that when they do go out, and then the CG starts shooting at them and opening fire, if there's a return of, if there's some reaction that they were not expecting, what would that do is it'll have the regime panic a little bit, and that will go to a step that would potentially lead to their demise in a more rapid way. And that way, we minimize the human misery that is going on there.
Yeah, well, Ramin is certainly asking a pointed question, again, that's quite political and contemporary. Some thoughts from you, Mr. Assadi?
Yes, Iranian people and Iranian new movement for democracy can find her way, his way, and people do what they need for future of Iran. I wish all the people in the world, the governments and people and the journalists and media and all of things, please don't believe what regime says. What Ahmadinejad says in United Nations, all of his lies. It's not belongs to Iranian people. It's just belongs to a group they impose in Iran. We call them Taliban, Iranian Taliban. They are against the modernists. They are against the West. They are against the human rights. They wanted to ruin first Iran and then all the world. Please don't accept a regime for trade or something else. And I have to say nuclear is not the main problem of Iran. Our main problem in Iran is human rights. If the Western countries, especially USA, get joined by the Iranian regime, it means they kill the Iranian people and it means they kill the future. What we need, just don't accept this government and not more.
Would you live in Iran again?
I wish live in Iran, but it depends on many different factors.
If the mullahs were out of power,
of course, in the first minute I will back to my country.
Yes, talk again, if you would, about the experience of reliving this, because it was so physical for you. You almost had a heart attack, didn't you?
Yes.
I mean, when you were bringing up these memories, and
yes,
recalling them.
When I started. In my book, all the time, I was shivering. This is my habit. In the early morning, I started writing, 5 or 6 in the morning. Every moment when I started writing, I move, tearing, I shivering, and sometimes I crying loud. And after write 5 or 6 pages, I took my little dog and went out and forget what happened. And after 6 months of writing my books, one day I had a heart attack, and I go to I have to go to hospital and for bypass.
You almost had a heart attack when you saw the photograph of Hamid too?
Yeah, not that moment, but after that.
And now you're doing this Ruz Online in Paris.
Yes.
What is that exactly?
That Ruz Online is one of most popular website. Iranian website, it published in Persian and English.
And you say that you're not political, but do you obviously are opposed to the power that this regime, this present regime, has.
Yes.
So, and there are Iranian agents all over the world, especially in places like Paris,
yes,
aren't there?
But in Ruz Online, I work in the art section. I am the chief editor of art section in the Ruz Online.
Would you like to read something for us from your book?
Do you want to you choose something?
Well, actually, I'll tell you what. If there's something you'd like me to read particularly, I thought maybe I could read if you have some apprehension about that. Because I think some of these passages are just so, arresting. I'm sorry to use that word, but that is the word that comes to mind. Here's just a – this is from the prison. It's dated the 12th of March to the 18th of March, 1983. And You're writing in Paris. You're saying, my little dog is yapping, licking my feet. He wants me to take him out. His name is Sonny, the little dog that you just mentioned, right? He's my little boy, kind and loyal. He has no idea that under the pressure of the whip, I too became a dog. He is the opposite of my broken, wounded, and devastated self. But all this has nothing to do with my beautiful dog. He has no idea that once I had to bark before I was allowed to speak. On this stormy Parisian morning, I am writing my 15th letter to you and to history, and am forced to return to the most bitter days of my life, to the time when my battered body was shaking on the torture bed and my soul was running away to avoid surrendering to the devil. And again, this takes place the 12th to the 18th of March, 1983. You have left, and I am twisting and turning on the blanket. My shoulders are in agony. My shoulder blades want to break away from my body. I want to find some calm to sleep for a few minutes, but it's not possible. I sit up with difficulty. I lean my head against the wall. The toothache has returned. I press my hand against the wall and stand up. I walk on my feet with difficulty. I get tired quickly and struggle to sit down. I am all ears. You might come back at any moment. First, we'll show you your wife in her coffin. She's like my own sister. She's looking very pretty. By the way, would you like to see your wife on the night of Eid? My wife's image appears. Then I see the row of coffins. I read the names one by one. I know all of them. I have worked with all of them. Like me, they wanted to help Iran reach a better tomorrow. Now they are sleeping inside their coffins. Back then, I had not read nor heard anything about the coffin torture. Only later would I hear the full story. Showed you coffins, and they said, these are people who died. These are your comrades, and you are next. Your wife may be next.
No, they were not died. They showed they are died.
That they're dead, yes. Yes, yes. And you can be one of them,
yes,
right?
That's what they're doing.
I mean, that's another, just another
form of torture. It is one of the most horrifying torture ways.
How many of your colleagues do you think were killed?
I think from my party, 200 people, and from all the party and groups in Iran, near 5,000 persons executed or killed.
And when you in the passage I just read, when the soles of your feet are raw because they were essentially, you were tortured on the soles of your feet.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
But everywhere, your ears, your teeth. Every part of your body, really.
Every part of my body, even in, I can't move my hands now after 3 years, just this, because I took my hand like this and hanging from this.
We can't see you on the radio, but you're hanging from the ceiling.
Yes, literally.
Held upside down for long periods of time.
Sometimes for two or three days.
So, do you think he's read your book, Hamid?
Yes.
You're pretty sure that he has read it? Do you know that he has read it? Yeah. We're getting a little quick Farsi translation here. Yeah.
And I don't know. I wish he read this book. And
how would you want him to be affected by this book? Would you want him to feel repentant, to feel sad that he did all these things to you? How would you want him to feel?
If I see him?
If he read your book?
I don't know. Maybe... My main aim for write this book is to tell to the people in my country and all the world the people like Brother Hamid can't be forever hidden.
That's a good point to end on. A good hopeful point. Thank you so much for being with us. Hushag Asadi's book is Letters to My Torture. He'll be at the Berkeley Arts and Letters Hillside Club tomorrow night at 7:30. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.